Morning. You're listening to the weekly Cybersecurity Podcast, episode 10, summarizing security news and items of interest for the week ending the 5th of August 2016. So let's get started. I'm Stuart from Velocity in Hong Kong.
And I'm Brendan from the ABSH Group in Melbourne, Australia.
If this is your first time listening, thanks for coming. Our aim is to produce this every week. Come back often and feel free to add this to your favorite podcast app.
So, Stuart, it's 12 o'clock here, mate, so I'm going to say good afternoon to our listeners.
Well, it's still morning here, so I can get away with what I said.
Another great week of news, mate.
Yeah, some interesting stuff, and of course for those people that follow this kind of thing, this week's fairly big because you have DEF CON and Black Hat in Las Vegas in the USA, which is, there's often stuff saved up specifically for that, so there's some interesting papers that are coming out of that, and we'll touch on a couple of them, I guess, in this week's news.
But before we do that, can we get the inaugural Stuart Sanders ankle update?
Well, I've tried putting on some real shoes today for the first time, and they came off as soon as I came into the office. So it was, I'm wandering around the office now in socks, for anyone that cares, because my ankle was not happy about the old black shoes today.
Yes, still on the road to recovery then.
Indeed.
Is that the reason you didn't go and attend the Black Hat and DEF CON in Vegas?
No, actually, I would actually, it'd be something that I'd find fascinating. Of course, though, you know, the typical thing for people that go is, you know, don't take anything that you don't want somebody else to own. Burner phones and burner computers, basically. It's like, don't go anywhere near a hotel or anything there. That's,
we should go next year and actually cover it for our listeners. Do like a roundup.
I would love to. That'd be great.
Take that offline. All right, what do you want to start with this week, mate?
Well, I thought the Malware Bytes paper that they've presented at Black Hat on a survey around crypto ransomware was a good one to start with.
I would say shocking and rather concerning is probably my takeaway from that paper. It was the survey of 540 CIO, CISOs, and basically IT directors and decision makers. Companies with an average of 5,400 employees, mainly in US, Canada, UK, and Germany, I believe.
So these are enterprises. These are not your small business or home users, but there's some interesting numbers coming out of this. Pretty nasty, actually.
Remember, these guys with full IT teams and DR policies and procedures and so forth, but they're still saying the average recovery time was 9 hours, with a third of them losing revenue and 20% of them saying they had to halt business operations completely.
Yeah, it was certainly quite interesting there. I mean, the UK, which was apparently hit particularly hard by some of these recently, 9% of organizations, when they suffered an attack, had every single device on the corporate network encrypted and locked out.
Which is kind of in line with what we've been saying for a little while now. That
I was saying I was expecting this to happen, and of course it already is.
we're not as futuristic as we think we are.
we can see where it's going. We just haven't had to deal with it yet.
Well, it won't be long before it gets here. It's almost turning like the UK is the testing ground, or I don't know, the place to be for this type of stuff, I guess, like we said last week, mainly due to their proximity to where the groups are and, you know, convenient working hours.
I would expect it's the time zone, you know, it makes it great for them in terms of, you know, they can be more proactive in terms of the attacks. Go home and play with your kids at night after you've got a ransom from a UK company, right?
Well, today was hard time. I know we infected 30 million machines.
Oh, dear. Anyway, going on, nearly 60% of all ransomware attacks in the enterprise demanded over 1,000 US. Over 20% of attacks asked for more than 10,000 US, and 1% even asked for over 150,000 US. Globally, more than 40% of victims paid the ransom demands. That was staggering to me.
Especially for these guys, which would have major backup. So obviously they're looking, they're just doing a return on investment, right? They're saying, what's the cost for us to recover versus the cost to pay the ransom?
Healthcare and financial services are the leading industries attacked, which was interesting. 3.5% even said lives are at stake because of the ransomware's debilitating effects. That's scary.
But, not surprising, though, given the healthcare sector was targeted. Yeah.
And going back to the earlier comment, 63% more than entire business day trying to fix endpoints. The most popular way of addressing the problem is not through protection, but by backing up. In other words, it's, people are now basically assuming that systems are going to get infected, and they're just trying to work out how quickly they can get back online.
Yeah. The number that I found most interesting was the actual division between the attack points. So they were saying that half of the attacks come from the actual endpoint itself. I'm guessing that's web browser attacks, USB sticks, that kind of thing. But 46% originated from email.
Email's still a big attack vector.
Yeah, massive.
We certainly, I spent a lot of time talking with clients over security awareness for employees, and just, if you're not sure, ask someone if you think this looks a bit suspicious.
Definitely. I mean, it's one of your, if we want to be good data guardians, we need to be educating our team and our staff. We can't blame someone for clicking on a link that's malicious when, they're targeted. So they're designed for people to be clicking on them.
Yeah, and it's as I say to some people, you may laugh, but it's sometimes the right message at the wrong time. We can all laugh and say, oh, we'd never be tricked by a DHL delivery message, but what if you are expecting one?
Exactly right. I heard on the radio on the way to work yesterday, a guy, they got on a gotcha call, and the reason his sister put him up was because he used to go, oh, who would fall for one of those gotcha calls? You must be so stupid, rah, rah, rah. And then in the end, he's fallen for one himself.
No one's perfect.
Interesting news out of, I think it was Black Hat, about
Jeep. This was same guys as last year.
Yeah.
Did the Jeep attack last year that did a remote code Wi-Fi takeover.
Direct connection with Sprint Wireless, I believe, in the US.
Yeah, that's it.
So they were, they did say, and to their credit, both Jeep and themselves, they were saying that, the vulnerabilities that they had identified last year have been fixed up by Chrysler. But the target this year was the ODB port on the actual steering wheel. So that's the little port underneath that the technicians often, more mechanics, do your survey and monitoring and, update firmware and all that kind of stuff. But there were some nasty outcomes of their investigation. I can see here they'll say that they can, and this is at speed, mind you, turn the steering wheel 90 degrees, lock the brakes on.
To Chrysler's benefit, I guess, somebody needs physical access to the car to actually, install something to make this work. But, once it's happened, you could then install a remote takeover capability, but you obviously need to get in the car first.
Yeah.
So it's not a huge risk to your average user, but it certainly underscores the fact that the cars themselves, they're now becoming part of sort of the IT and the internet and everything else. And unfortunately, you're talking about systems like the CAN bus, which date from the 1970s, which is well before anything security minded was even thought about, let alone discussed.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
And while we're talking about attacks, there was a bit of news here from my city the other day. In fact, it's not even the first one of its type. There was another Bitcoin exchange which got majorly breached and attacked with $67 million exfiltrated out in Bitcoins. And of course, it remains to be seen what impact this has on the exchange itself. But it was. They've pretty much closed the front while they do the investigation. Mm-hmm. Are they large enough to be able to
sustain that kind of loss,
or what are they going to do about it? I guess it yet remains to be seen. But I guess that's one of the issues with a digital currency that is. Largely, I won't say totally untraceable, but largely untraceable, is that I don't think they have much chance of getting the money back unless they follow one of the earlier paths where there was a hard fork in Bitcoin earlier this year to great teeth gnashing and other things of whether that should have been done at the time when a similar attack was taken on an exchange.
Yeah, the interesting one on this attack, though, was that they were able to bypass the withdrawal limits.
Yeah, that's why they're still doing the investigation now, and they had obviously a security company looking after parts of it, which is why more wasn't actually taken. There was no currency transferred out. It was just the Bitcoins.
Yeah. I do see a future movie plot coming, Matt.
Well, the interesting thing was, there's nobody that said that there was any real evidence that it was actually planned around this, but we actually had a typhoon here in Hong Kong at the time, and everyone stays at home with the windows closed. It could well be part of a future movie plot.
And good news for people that don't own Bitcoin, the price has dropped 20% overnight on this news.
Yep, so if you get a ransomware attack this week, you're in a bit of luck.
Yeah, you get 20% discount.
It's always a bright side, right?
Other big news from this week, we had Yahoo announce, well, they didn't announce, but there was some evidence to suggest that I think 200 million Yahoo accounts were up for sale on the dark web.
Yeah, this is being done by a guy that put the LinkedIn accounts up for sale, so he already has a history of having real data that was then used, obviously, in multiple breaches later on. And it actually comes from a similar era, so this is data from 2012, supposedly, 200 million users. Has a range of information, including usernames, MD5 hashed passwords. MD5, of course, is a hashing mechanism which is long out of date. Date of birth, some backup email addresses, as well as for our unlucky US compatriots. They also had sometimes their zip code. So a good amount of data to work with if you can find any information out of that. Although some people have said there's probably many abandoned accounts in this.
Yeah, that's certainly from that age. But then again, we saw with the LinkedIn leak, there were still a number of people who were
using the same password 64 years later, right?
So, like we always have said in the past, you really need to be turning on that two-factor authentication. And
don't reuse passwords.
Yes, definitely don't reuse your passwords. If you've got to use a password manager, that's even better. That's better than reusing passwords.
Use 1Pass, LastPass, RoboForm, any of those that can do password management for you.
Yeah, and if you're going to use one of those, keep the application up to date also. I think most of them now do it themselves. I'm not sure about RoboForm, but I know
A lot of them are automatic.
Yeah.
Particularly if you use the cloud sync type ones.
I'm not going to say good news, but an example of a vendor being proactive.
Proactive.
Yeah. Yep. We had iDrive this year, who provide a cloud backup service. This week they proactively went and enabled two-factor authentication on a subset of their user accounts because they found that they were vulnerable, whether they were reused or weak or... Who knows, maybe they took some of the LinkedIn and Yahoo accounts and applied those passwords to their own database.
Well, you know, if you're doing proactive security and you have a large number of users, it would sort of certainly make sense to try and match some email addresses and passwords to your own database and run it through and go, you know what, these guys are using the same password, let's just flick them a password reset. So, you know, again, same advice, don't reuse your passwords, please.
Yeah. That sounds like we're harping, but, you know, people are still doing it.
Every week we have the same news over people getting hacked because of it. So
yeah, exactly right. Moving on, mate. News bites for this week. We had Classic Shell and Audacity compromised. Those that don't know, Classic Shell is a application you can install on Windows, I think it's from 7 and up, that gives you your start button and makes it look like the old days.
Yeah, so it's I think it's mostly Windows 8. It was particularly popular when Windows 8 came out, you know, that's with right, the sort of the right. Tablet interface and no buttons and all those things, to make it look like Windows 7. And of course, Classic Shell, as being a free one, at least I believe it was, meant that it was used by millions of people, and they apparently use a particular site for their downloads, and someone managed to get into one of the accounts that had access to that, and added a special surprise.
Yes, they injected some malware into that executable, so that when you install the application, it didn't actually install the application, it just overwrote your master boot record.
Yes, and then when you reboot you'll have to excuse the sort of the chuckle, because it's someone being obviously really nasty, but it basically, as you reboot, you get a little message on the screen that says, as you reboot, you find that something has overwritten your MBR. It is a sad thing, and your adventures have ended here. Direct all hate to Peggle Crew, and then it gives some Twitter and other things. And so basically, it's a very old style, the kind of thing that you would see from the late 80s, early 90s on bulletin board type stuff. Being applied to a modern age thing.
Yeah, a little I'm curious as to, they could have done so many other things with this.
Like get some ransoms.
Yeah, well, that's what I mean. I mean, they could have sold these account data to the ransomware guys. They could have used it themselves to launch their own, bought the ransomware kit from, you know, the dark web, and then used it to do their own. I mean. I suspect potentially this is someone getting lucky, maybe.
Yeah, maybe.
Didn't have the reach, or doesn't have the nous to work out how to monetize it, or I don't know, maybe they did inject some other stuff in there. If you were unlucky to download Classic Shell or Audacity in the last week and receive that message, we would certainly recommend you reformat your machine, clean install, because you don't know what other nasties it may have added to your machine. Obviously, you can get your data back by simply using a Windows boot disk.
Fixing the MBR.
But once you've got that data off, obviously, definitely want to reformat and start from scratch.
Yep, totally agreed. So next, you want some local news for your Australian friends?
Yeah, so obviously the census, the 2016 census, caused quite a rift with the privacy groups here in Australia. It's compulsory, obviously, for all Australians to fill out their census and fill it out correctly. But this year, the big shift was we're moving to digital. So instead of getting the old paper forms, we actually received a code, and we're supposed to be able to go online and stick this unique code in and enter all our data. And obviously, given the amount of stories we've just spoken about, there's a lot of privacy groups and even individuals concerned that, you know, all of their data that could be used for identity theft is going to be entered into this massive system. And so people are worried about it, especially because they changed the law this time. They're actually going to hold that data for 4 years. In the past, it's only been held for 18 months. So there's been a huge, there's been a push for people to boycott census, and then there was threats of fines if you don't complete your census form of up to $180 a day. And so at the moment.
Because historically, census information is typically, it's aggregate, it's demographic. But one of the things that I noted, and there was certainly some controversy around, and this is obviously, while I'm Australian, I'm from afar and I don't live in Australia, so I actually don't have to do this. But is that they're keeping information like names and all the other things that are associated, that normally aren't collected as part of a census because it's supposed to be just demographic, and they're actually keeping that. And then, of course, they're keeping it in a database. So this is basically going to be, target number one if you want to, be a hacker that has all the information about any Australian. It's going to, you just put a big, check mark, attack here basically on the Australian Census and Statistics Department. So I guess it's really going to be watch this space and for the news in coming months to see what happens.
I'll certainly be covering it, mate, and I'll provide an update next week to see what the outcome was. It's August 9th, I think, is the actual census day. So we'll watch this space and see what happens. But there was some reports. The Australian Bureau of Statistics certainly came out and said that they had some penetration testing done, and they used a little bit colloquial term. They said, "Oh, we've had hackers attempt to breach it," but like we saw with the Black Hat conference, every device that was on the stand available for hackers to walk away with, if they could successfully compromise it, they walked away with. So.
Time to own is. I don't think there's been a year of recent times where people haven't walked away with a machine. So there's always zeros days, and then, of course, there are groups that have become famous. There was a Italian group that last year got themselves compromised and had a raft of 0 days that weren't known to the security industry at large. That were then, as people were digging through their data, it was like, oh, here's another one. Go get that patch kind of thing. So it was. There are groups out there that keep these things for just this type of thing.
Yeah, definitely. And one quick other news bite. We did have some interesting Mac security vulnerabilities discovered this week.
Yeah. This was well, it certainly went public this week. Anyway, it was actually it's been patched before. But this was a little feature of a piece of software that runs in sort of the Mac that supposedly protects it. And of course, someone found out a way to not only bypass it but give themselves privilege escalation capabilities as well. So Apple has rushed out and patched that. So one of the recent patches have fixed that stuff up.
And I think that's pretty much time for the for this session, Stu.
Yep, it's getting closer to afternoon now for me, although it's still not quite there.
I think I'm going to go and have some lunch right now, mate. It's just on 12:30. I'm feeling quite hungry. I was in the office 7:30 this morning, so I think I've earned myself a 5 to 10 minute break.
Good for you. All right, thanks again, Ren. I'll
No
talk to you next
dramas.
week.
That covers off the major cybersecurity related events for the week. Thank you for listening. If you have any topics you would like us to discover, sorry, to discover, to cover, please feel free to contact either Stuart or myself, and we will endeavor to try and fit it in between all of the other news articles that come up. Until next week, stay safe. Thanks for listening.
Thanks.